Chapter 24. Early in November, Ron got his notice to report for his draft physical. The letter scared him. On first reading, it propelled him through the rooms, repeatedly stopping and staring incoherently at the notice. One voice inside him kept repeating, "This is our death warrant." Another screamed, "You fucking coward! You slimy chicken!" On the outside, he kept repeating, "Why did this happen to me?" And thinking that if he was born at another time or born richer, it never would have happened. Ron was tangled in his web of contradictions when his letters occurred to him. They were the documents of his two knee operations and would be enough to get him out, probably. He did remember one draft counselor saying that it all depended on how many men they needed to make their quota for that month. What would be enough to get you out one month might not work the next. "It all sucks," he said to himself bitterly. He told himself that he was just scared shitless. Images of not being able to run fast enough when it was time flooded him. He knew stories about how prostitutes booby-trapped their cunts with razor blades. The thought caused him to shake. After reading the notice, the counselor at the college asked, "What happened to your 2S deferment?" "I never got one," said Ron. "Why not?" "I guess I didn't think of it." The counselor's mouth dropped open. He had been in the service and in Vietnam. He firmly believed that the fact that he wasn't dead was as coincidental as whether or not a raindrop rolled down your back while you were caught in a thunderstorm. "I don't believe that you're for real, man." The death-worn voice inside of him began to shout that Ron was the world's biggest jerk-off. "I've got these," said Ron, producing his two doctor's letters. The counselor looked at the envelope and said, "What's wrong with you?" "I had these two knee operations," continued Ron, trying to smile. He explained how cartilage had been taken out of both of his knees. He watched the heavy black eyebrows and dark expression on the counselor's face. Ron knew the guy was sincere, but had the feeling that there was no one home in back of the guy's eyes. Ron figured maybe the guy was imbalanced. A thought crept in him like a soft aroma. "I'm stupid, and he's crazy. Great." The counselor wasn't any help. Ron left with the same feeling he had when his mother sent him to the shrink. It was a sense of none of the possible answers fitting in with how he felt. The idea of his being irreparably fucked up and also a weird kind of explorer was what had carried him around for his mental balance. He stood in line and waited for his coffee. His first shrink's name had been Minsky. "Why do you think you're here?" said Minsky. He lit a cigarette, pushed back from his desk in his doctor-like way. He routinely pulled out the bottom drawer of his desk and propped his foot up on it, using it as leverage to rock back and forth in his chair. "I guess it was because I had a fit," said Ron. "What kind of fit do you think you had?" The shrink emphasized the word fit in a way that Ron took to be a snicker. "Well, my stepfather came home one night. I think he had been working out at the bar or out with his friends. I was in his kitchen, eating a sandwich. He asked me if I had done something. I don't remember what that was now, but I hadn't done it because I'd hurt my knee again and was using a chair to get around. I don't mean a wheelchair, I mean a regular straight-back chair that I could rest my weight on when I needed to take a step, like a walker, I guess. He walks in and asked if I'd thrown out the garbage or some stupid thing like that, and I told him that I should have thrown it out the window or some smart-ass thing. He comes at me like a bull elephant. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't run or fight back, and my mouth was filled with food." Minsky's fingers joined at the tips and continued to rock back and forth. "What happened then?" I don't remember, said Ron. Rinsky noticed that the boy's ears were large for the size of his head and jotted down his first entry into the personal notebooks he kept on his patients. The taping system would record the session verbatim, but the doctor's personal observations were kept in his own handwriting in his own notebook. Minsky stared at his custom-weighted, finely crafted pen. He ran his fingers up and down the golden shaft. He tried to bring his mind back to his patient. The boy wasn't saying anything and was staring intently at him. His dumb ears had gotten red and intensified his expression. People, like animals, often get excited when they eat, began the doctor. For some reason, he couldn't take his eyes off those ears. If you bother a normally friendly dog during his meal, he may very well snap at you. You felt upset about being injured, and you responded. I told you before, he belted me, and I spit the food out, and he belted me again, and then I couldn't stop shaking. But the important thing is that you felt helpless. That's how I usually feel, said Ron. Why is that? Because I usually can't do anything about what's happening to me. At school, they hit us all the time. We can't do anything about it. Maybe we'll keep you out of school for a while, said Minsky. Ron brightened. He was going to get help at last. But, Minsky continued, there is one thing you can do for me. Your mother tells me that she can't afford to pay more than $15 a visit. Now that we're keeping you out of school, I'd like you to look around for some kind of part-time job so that you can add another $10 a week and be paying the normal fee. Sure, said Ron, wondering how quickly he could be out of there and how long he could stay out of school. Then I'll see you next Thursday at the same time. Okay, said Ron. He remembered going back twice more at the $15 fee, but he couldn't remember telling Minsky anything else about his life. He did remember telling him that his real father loved to play golf and that he had developed a hatred for any mention of the game. It seemed to Ron to be the reason that he never saw his father anymore. Weekends and golf matches were at the same time, and Ron lost out again and again. He remembered Minsky telling him about the beauties of the game and how great it felt to get a feel for it. He didn't remember what else they talked about until the end of the third visit. Minsky told him that he and his mother had to find a way to come up with the extra $10. That was my last appointment. Ron flunked two courses and was thrown out of Catholic school. George and Marjorie bought their house in the suburb. Minsky died of lung cancer a few years later. Ron decided to tell as few people as possible about his physical. He would have to tell his family, and perhaps he would mention it to the teachers whose classes he'd be missing. That would be it. There was a certain feeling of maturity that came with being called for his physical that Ron was secretly enjoying. He could finally control the voice that said he was a slimy chicken. He would go and become a man. Chris and Vivi walked over to the snack bar where he was having his coffee. Far out, what's happening in this snack bar? Said Chris. Hi, Ron, said V in a particularly friendly way that Ron thought was probably phony. I don't know what's happening here. I'm sitting here wondering if I should go to Canada. Excellent, said Chris. What's up there? Escape, said Ron miserably. Uh-oh. Did you hear from the government? Ron nodded. How did you lose your 2S already? The semester's not even over yet. I never got one. I guess it just slipped past me. That wasn't too bright of you, said V, in her cheerfully admonishing tone. When she cracked her gum for emphasis, Ron wanted to dump his coffee on her. Chris, she said matter-of-factly, I'm going over to the sorority table and see who's coming to the Shore House this weekend." Ron watched her faded, tight jean ass as it left. It didn't matter how good her ass was. He would never put up with the rest of her. "So what do you think is going to happen?" asked Chris. "I'll probably get shot for one reason or another," Ron answered morosely. 2 weeks after the dinner with his parents, Hank and Jolie announced that they were married. He bought a ring, which he put on her finger while he was inside of her. She claimed that was the position from which all wedding vows should be exchanged. She asked Hank to make love to her until one of them passed out. The idea excited him, and he pumped vigorously. She raked his back with her nails and whispered fiercely that she wanted to see his blood when she came. She did. After what seemed like hours, they fell asleep. Hank tried to keep his dick stuck between her legs the whole time, but it must have come out while they were sleeping. As he woke up, one of his first thoughts was that he was now living with her under the same arrangement that she'd had with Tony. He grimaced for a moment, but decided that it didn't matter. He was going to be happy, and he was going to make this woman happy. He smiled at her lovingly. Who wouldn't give their left nut to do what he was just able to do, anytime he wanted? He was never going back to Wellmont again. The only reason his parents had ever tolerated him was because he wasn't a threat. They hadn't understood how sensitive and real he was. If he hadn't found her, he'd be a creep, just like the rest of them. He looked around the room and was surprised again at being underground. But it was cozy. They snuggled in a quilt, naked, and he was soon asleep.